This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts, Mark Zielinski, Jeremy Duval, and Rob Phaneuf as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Shannon Shoemaker.
And I'm Rob Phaneuf. And as you heard, we have the champion of Adepticlash himself, Mr. I go to every tournament on the planet, Shannon Shoemaker. Shannon, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well.
Well, obviously, you're just coming off of a big win, right? You go to Adepticon and you smash face?
I wouldn't say smash face, but it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I managed to string together enough wins to come out just barely ahead of Jesse, Mark Rupp for that matter.
Before we get to all that good stuff, where are you in painting this army that you're bringing to Blue City Brawl, like in a week?
Right. Well, I think I pretty much know what I want to do with the color scheme, and I've got one unit, my largest, mostly base coated. I do need to tone down one of the couple of the colors. I wanted them a little more muted, but I was priming white because I'll have a lot of red and gray, so they're a little brighter than I wanted. I'll have to figure out how to tone them back down. Usually I don't go over white. So I'm working on it. I think I'll have the army done no problem. The display board and getting everything that I wanted for the display board, that's another question. I don't know if we'll complete that.
Robert Brandon, I'm sure we'll bring something for you guys to use. You know, or is Robert bringing the same army he's played for like the last 5 years?
No, he's doing something new as far as I know. So should be exciting.
I think I saw a base with a bunch of pumpkins on it. So I'm hoping that's the army. So, but we'll see.
Don't think that'll be it.
Okay. Well, then it's going to be a surprise, like a great, beautiful present.
I have to make his bases for him. So that's on the checklist too to get done.
Wow, you are just a man of many traits.
Hopefully successfully completing them is one of those traits.
Well, let's jump in. Obviously, I think everybody on the planet knows who you are, but let's humor the couple people that may not know who Shannon Shoemaker is. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Shannon. You know, who are you? Where are you from?
Well, I know Lennon asked about this, so actually I grew up in Missouri and moved to Illinois, to the Chicago area after I graduated college, obviously for work, and I've been here ever since.
I'm assuming that's the reason why you're a Cardinals fan, living in Chicago.
Yeah, little interesting. I started off more a Royals fan with George Brett. I mean, the Cardinals are fine, but my dad liked the Cardinals, so you know he had to pick the other team, and it's kind of split halfway between them. And the Royals were, you know, had what, 4 or 5 seasons there. They were pretty good with Saberhagen and George Brett and several other guys. So, and had the I-70 series back too when I was a kid. So that was pretty exciting to watch as well.
What's your gaming origin story? You know, what game did you cut your teeth on as a youth?
So it's interesting. Really no gaming as a youth. I played a lot of sports and I really didn't play that much in the way of board games either. Some checkers with grandparents and maybe some card games here and there. But no board games really, and definitely no miniature gaming. When I got to college, I did a little D&D with friends in my dorm on the floor, and I also started. I mentioned this before, but I started mudding then. So basically, text-based MMOs, which I actually still think are superior to GUI-based MMOs. After college, I played some Warcraft, like I think lots of World of Warcraft, like lots of people did probably. And then weaned myself off of that. And around that time is probably when I started getting interested in miniatures. I had looked into it when I was in high school and never really got involved with playing any of the games. It would have been Warhammer Fantasy then, probably 3rd or 4th edition. And so after I gave up on MMOs, then I was looking for something else to fill the time. And I kind of remembered back that I had been interested in the miniatures, so I started checking out to see what I could find, and obviously found Fantasy and 40K. And about that time, somebody ran a little Kickstarter, and Mantic's first Kickstarter in 2012, and they obviously could get a lot more army for a bang for the buck than with Warhammer. So that's kind of what pulled me in, and I've been playing Kings of War since Gen Con 2013, I guess, is probably the first time I played. First year was at Gen Con.
And I think you've been at every, have you been at every Adepticon event for Kings of War?
Yeah, I went to the first one in 2013, but I didn't play. I didn't have an army to play. And obviously I hadn't seen how the games played before that. So that was a good experience. They just had four players there, but it was a good experience to see them playing, and definitely was interesting. And so I stuck with it since then.
Do you play anything else besides Kings of War now? I mean, I did see a picture of you playing John Carter in some Dead Zone, I believe.
Yeah, so I had played just a little in a summer campaign Dead Zone 2 or 3 years ago in first edition with some local guys here from Chicago. Basically the Todd Warren crew back before he had Grognard's Games. And then I didn't play after that. And I thought I'd give it another shot this year because I'd heard a lot of people talking about the second edition being really good. I rushed to paint up some units, to paint up a Forge Father list for Firefight. And then my Dead Zone list was going to have to come out of whatever units I had for Firefight. So I ended up playing in both the Dead Zone tournament and the Firefight tournament at Adepticon this year. And they were both quite a bit of fun. Really, Dead Zone's much smoother than what it was before, is from what I can remember of it before.
Any memorable moments from either of the events?
Well, getting caught out is interesting because I'm fairly well versed in the Kings of War rules, so I don't get caught out too often there. It happens sometimes when you don't see a charge, but when I was playing Firefight, obviously, I just read through the rule book once and didn't have the experience, and I played the guy who was the eventual winner. I don't remember his last name, but Eric was his first name. I think he's one of Coach's crew from New York. He was playing Vermin, and he had a tunneler, and I didn't realize all the rules around tanks, so apparently they can't move into defensible fortified terrain, which would, Kings of War terms, would be forest and, buildings would be for Warpath, since you can move inside the building. So he couldn't come in after me, but I didn't realize that. And I needed to get around a building to see one of his units to fire at it. So I moved my Iron Ancestor out of the forest. And he charged about 28 inches across the table with a special order to do a triple move and wiped my Ancestor out. So that was an interesting way to learn. Learn the rules.
Locally, do you guys have a club up there that you play with? I know you, Todd Warren and Jerry Page. There's a lot of guys in the area, but do you guys have a club?
Jerry's gotten busier. He's doing some. I'm probably working every day again. I know last year we both had more free time, so we played a few games, but we haven't played much in quite a while now. And I don't get down to Grognard's too often. It's just far enough that it, especially trying to get down there at night with rush hour, would be a long drive for me. Although Grant is getting more interested in getting back to the Kings of War scene, so I may get in a few games with him because he wants to get some practice in. He's hoping to qualify for Masters next year, so that'll be real interesting. We get the handsome man himself in.
Maybe you can have a Padawan now. That'd be cool.
Yeah, well, I already have one, but I have to keep her interested. So
that's right. How did you guys end up in the team event?
We won all three of our games, although I believe we probably had too good of a list based on who was there this year. Last year, Corey Reynolds and his friend, I can't think of his last name, Chris from New York, came down and they kind of kicked everyone's teeth in. So I tuned up our list a little this year, thinking we might face something like that again. And I think we probably had too much. Our list was probably too strong. So next year, I think we'll go back to maybe more of a melee list. Both of us. I don't think the Goblin contingent in our list was really too strong. It was pretty balanced. But I had 1,000 points of Twilight Kin, which was 2 Chariot Hordes, a Dragon, and Bassasu. So that's pretty.
Well, let's dive in. Let's talk about Adepticlash. First of all, what do you think of the name, Adepticlash?
I think it's fine. I know Mike wanted to switch it out, obviously, from Clash of Kings because that's moving to the fall event. So it keeps the whole Clash of Kings from the Clash pack and also Adepticon as well in the name. So I think it fits.
Other than Adepticon, I mean, you travel to every event, right? This is no big thing to you, right?
I'd love to. I mean, it'd be awesome. But obviously there's time limitations and I've got 2 kids. They play sports, and whenever they play park district sports, I usually help coach their teams or I'm involved just volunteering. at practices. So Kings of War tournaments are my opportunity to just relax. And when we relax, it's kind of tense too playing a tournament sometimes, but relax and get away from the other commitments at home. But really once a month, I know I've got a couple of months here where I'm going to have a couple of tournaments, but probably once a month is about all I can squeeze in.
How many Adepticons is this for you now? We were kind of talking a little bit before. How many is this?
Yes. I believe 2013 was the first year of Kings of War, so I didn't play, but I went to that one. So what, 14, 15, five years then?
It's a long time, and the game's certainly come a long way since first edition.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I remember, like I said, the first Adepticon was 4 players. The second one, I think, was 8.
Mm-hmm.
The first year that we had the Master Circuit, I was surprised. I mean, it really blew up. We had 38. The last couple of years have been down a little bit, but I think it's due to multiple reasons. Having it at a convention when there's all these other opportunities to go to tournaments where it's just focused on the tournament, I think hurts somewhat. With a convention, there's other things to see and do, so putting the two-day commitment in can be a little tough. And then you have to pay the convention fee on top of the tournament fee, and hotels are generally more expensive and so forth. So I understand it's a commitment for people to try to travel from out of the area.
Now it's right in your backyard, isn't it not?
Yes, about 30 minutes drive for me. So I just commute back and forth every day.
What is in this fantastic list that you used to win this event?
All right. So I was planning to take Twilight Kin, but I figured out pretty quickly that if I was going to get the Firefight army painted up, I wasn't going to have time. So I ended up just recycling my master's list and switched a couple of magic items around, but all the units stayed the same. So I had the army of threes. So I had 3 rabble hordes for my infantry hordes, and then I had 3 shooting hordes, spitters horde with nothing, fleabag chariots with caterpillar, and fleabag chariots with vicious chant of hate. And I had 3 war trombones, 3 big rocks throwers, 3 kings on chariots, 1 with haste, 1 with beast slayer, and 1 with pipes of terror for brutal. And then my bog standard 3 wizards, 2 with alchemist curse, 1 with blood boil, and the 2 with alchemist curse, 1 had inspiring talisman, and 1 had fireheart amulet. And then I had 3 mincers to round it out.
This is sort of the list you took to Masters, but is this an army you've been playing with for a little while? Like, have you been developing this over the year?
Somewhat, I guess. I played goblins last year at Adepticon. I believe I played a pure goblin list then too, but I had Mob East, and I don't think I took mincers in it last year. So it was a fair bit different, maybe 40-50%. By points different last year. I only had 1 king on chariot and 1 chariot horde last year as well. I can't remember how I filled the rest of it out, but outside of having several mob beast, I think I had two troll hordes last year. And actually Adepticon last year is what weaned me off of troll hordes, because they were constantly getting wavered or hung up behind my rabble hordes, and I just got tired of dealing with it.
So how did you find the venue? I know this is a few years now. I've been in this new Schaumburg Convention Center.
Yeah, 3, maybe 4 now. 3 or 4, yep. It's really nice. We've got effectively our own room upstairs. There's probably, I think they were doing historical gaming in the room as well, but we had a row and a half of tables for Kings of War, and they had cycled the same tables through for Dead Zone and Warpath on Friday, same tables for the team tournament on Thursday. So we had a nice little corner there of 3 or 4 rows in a room, and plenty of space for people not to run into each other, and easy access out to the hallways and everything just right above the vendor hall. So 3 minutes to get down to the vendor hall from the room as well.
And how did you find the table setups and terrain?
I think it was pretty good. I don't remember anything being just completely open. I think actually the setup for the individual tournament was probably a little better than the team tournament. There were maybe a table or 2 we played on the team tournament that were fairly open because they had flat terrain, but that didn't affect shooting over it unless somebody was in it. So
right. It wasn't considered height 0. It was flat. I gotcha. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely, it channeled things a little bit. And I didn't notice any tables that just gave away tons of shooting. And I was playing a reasonable amount of shooting and played a couple of lists that had a reasonable amount of shooting as well.
And how'd you find the painting standard at the event?
It was really good. I didn't get to see every army because some people didn't have them out on display boards when I went through at lunch. But I saw most of them, even the ones people just had on trays to move around. I thought they looked good. Everything was tabletop or better for the most part, and I think that reflected in the scores. There was one that didn't get the full 20 for tabletop, but I'm not sure, might have had a couple of unpainted units in it. I didn't get a good look.
Was there any army that you thought was just the coolest one there?
There were some really nice armies. I mean, I don't know that they challenged Ryan Smith, but Mark Rupp had a fantastic looking army, and I asked him questions about his technique. So hopefully maybe give that a try at some point in the future. I thought it looked really great. It was a little darker than what you normally see, so I know that can sometimes hurt for scoring, but it was very softly blended together. I thought it just looked fantastic. Somewhat similar, if you know Chris's army, his is kind of a little darker but softly blended together. Looks really nice. And then Kyle Przelinski got the most player's choice votes, and he won the best Mantic army. He had a really nice army. His was more in the style of what we're used to seeing, where you highlight up, highlight up, highlight up. So it was a different style from Mark Rupp's.
What army was Mark Rupp playing?
Mark Rupp was actually, he was using, I'll mess this up. He was using Wrath of Kings characters, the Nasir, I believe it is, the demonic ones, as Abyssals. So that was his list. And then obviously Kyle, I think, was 100% Mantic in his undead army. Holy Diver had his goblin army, so he was Mantic as well. I forget. Apologize. I can't remember all the other Mantic lists, but I know there were several lists, if you look back through the war score, that picked up player's choice votes. So there were several nicely painted lists there for sure.
Going into the event, you know, what were your expectations?
I wasn't sure. I mean, you never see everyone who's going to be there ahead of time. I knew Jesse and Kyle were coming in. Was hoping Eric and Steve and maybe Kyle Poole would come in, but Eric got had something come up at work, and he had to work over the weekend, so he didn't get to come in. And then Chris, unfortunately for Chris Kapsner, 2 years in a row now he's had just bad luck. Luckily this year was vehicle troubles and not family member getting hurt like last year. So thankfully, it was just car troubles this year, but it's 2 years in a row he hasn't been able to come down. So I really look forward to playing him. It's always a good game. And then Eric is always going to be a good game too, because he'll kick your teeth in. So you have a tough game. So miss those guys, but I still had a lot of fun games, and I played several new people again this year that I hadn't played before. So I think maybe split 3-3 between new people and people I had played before.
Well, let's talk about the event itself. Let's go through your games. How many – do you guys play 6 games?
Yeah, we played 4 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday.
How'd you find it? Was it a good pace?
Yeah, actually, because Mike opened it up a little more. And, well, we were playing 55-minute rounds, so 20 minutes shorter than what we did at Masters. Same amount of points, which – I'll mention later. you'll get to mock me again. And then he gave us 30 minutes between rounds. So that was really nice. We had a lot of time to just sit and talk after games were over.
Everybody wants to hear about these games. So game one, who'd you play?
So I'll try to remember everything. Some of the games, some of what happened is not fresh in my memory. But if I look at some of Mike's pictures, maybe I can remember what happened. So my first game was against Alan Wignes from Minneapolis. He's a Lord of War, so the same club as Matt Schaefer and Jeff Shilkin. I'm not sure who else is in the club, but I know those guys for sure. So he hasn't been playing too long. Apparently, last year he came down to Dragonfall and was playing 40K, and then he walked by our tables and was like, hey, what are you guys playing? What's going on? And Matt Schaefer recognized his shirt from being in the same club and drug him into Kings of War, I think pretty willingly from the way Alan was talking. He seemed like he really enjoyed the game and really enjoys it. So he said he started painting up his army in November, and I thought it looked pretty good. He was playing dwarves. He was using War Machine So I don't know which army it is in War Machine that he was using for sure, but he had some walkers, striders, I'm not sure the correct term for him, War Machine, but he was using those as probably as Earth Elementals. So Planet Dwarf Army had three hordes of Earth Elementals, three organ guns, and three flame belchers. And I believe all of those were using sort of the walker mech type characters. And then he had three regiments of Ironclad. And I don't know how close that gets to his points. Oh, he had two hordes of Ogre Shooters as well. So the Ogrens or whatever those are in War Machine he was using. Stone Priest with Martyr's Prayer and Surge. And he had two Battle Drillers, I believe. And probably a flagger. And I think that was most of his list, as I recall. And then the first scenario we played was, I think it was control. So trying to get out and control the six quarters. So I felt fairly good about that since he's a little slower. And I could just stack two or three hordes in my center square and either push them forward or drop them back and just try to play. If I could control four squares, I was going to be fine if I didn't give him my center. So that's kind of what I looked to do. And having the kings on chariot was nice. I was able to push those up on both wings. And then I pushed my chariots up on the right wing. On the left wing, I had to leave my chariots back because I knew I'd probably need the unit strength at the end of the game. And he had a couple of organ guns on that side. And a chariot going up against organ guns is not going to be a pleasant result for me at 14, 16 nerve. So I had the rock lobber, so I kind of went after his ogre shooters early because since they have the long range, I wanted to clear those out. And I got one of them off maybe turn two and another one turn three where I had pushed my chariot horde, my king on chariot up on the right flank. I believe he put ogre shooters kind of on either flank, and then he had his earth elementals kind of stacked between them with couple of ironclad regiments up in front and two organ guns on his right flank, my left, and then one on his left flank. And then the flame belchers were kind of in the middle as well. And he chased my king on chariot off with those a little because I had moved up to threaten his stuff with the reload. And he just moved them up so I couldn't actually charge it. Interesting game. We were just kind of back and forth, keeping our distance from each other for a while until he had to start pushing up to try to get Earth Elemental hordes up into my zone. And don't remember all the details. I know I got both Ogre Shooter hordes off. I probably took off one Earth Elemental horde and one Ironclad regiment. And it was interesting. It came down at the end, so effectively I ran out of time at the end of my turn five. So I had 5 seconds left. So on turn six, I just said before we did anything, I'm like, these three units are going here, here, and here. Done. So we just moved those over. And then he had a chance on turn six to he could drop all his flame belcher shots and an organ gun into a couple of my scoring units. And I think – I can't remember what he got me down to. He was going at horde, so I think he was at nerve checks of maybe – 7 on one and maybe 6 or 8 on the other, and he didn't manage to pop either unit. So if we'd gone to turn 7, he definitely would have won the scenario short of rolling snake eyes because I was out of time, and I think he still – well, it might have been tight. I think he was sitting on about 45 seconds or a minute at the end of his turn 6, but he would have had enough time – should have had enough time to roll against one unit, take it off, and then that probably would have given him the scenario. I can't remember if Mike had anything in that one where we had to win by two or if it was just straight up 1-1. So that was the first game. It was really fun. I had a lot of fun playing it. I know Alan was a little worried that his list might be pretty tough and people would he might get dinged for sportsmanship, but I thought it was perfectly fine. In fact, I loved having that as my first game of the day because Alan was very nice, very excited to be playing, and so that was – I was a little short on sleep from the previous 2 days playing tournaments and sticking around late to chat with people. So it was great to have a game like that as my first game of the day.
It's always good, too, to kind of set the tone for the weekend, right? You're on, your first game is just a fun game.
Sure.
That's a good way to start the event.
Yep, and a very tough game. I mean, he was a little worried about it, but it's kind of a list I expect to see whenever I go to events. So I thought it was perfectly fine, and he played it pretty well.
Talk about game two. Who did you face?
Let me jump back here. So in game two, I faced Mark Rupp. He had played the ringer first game, so when he got me in round two, he's like, oh, no. Maybe I shouldn't have played the ringer effectively or whatever. But I think his list was fine, and he actually ended up 4-2 on the tournament. It was just a bad matchup with me in the second round because we were playing take and hold, so you had to get up on the tokens. And he was playing an all melee. So his Abyssal's list was all melee. And obviously I had some dual purpose units with the chariots and then the other shooting that I have in my list as well. So it was going to make it tough for him to move up. He put his units across the middle. So we had three units across the middle. And then I had put my unit tokens. Obviously in this one, you have to put your tokens on your opponent's side. And Mike played it where we both, people place two tokens. I think in the rule book, it's just you place one token each. So there's only three on the table, but this was fine. We played it with five. And this one, you probably did have to win by 2 points, or it was a draw if you were within 2 points. So he put his tokens kind of across the table, which I thought was smart because he's going to be moving up and want to fight me in melee. So he put them in position where if I didn't move up, he could fight past them and he would be the one scoring and I wouldn't be. And then for my tokens, I put them back kind of on the flanks and quite a ways back. Doing it again, I probably would have put them further back, but quite a ways back in his deployment zone. And I figured if he wants to put units on him to score, then those units aren't going to be in combat with me, which is good. And if he does, if he doesn't put units back there, then I've got kings on chariots. I'll just run back and leave one or two of those out of the fight and just let him sit and score tokens. So he ended up, let's see, his list was two Moloch. Well, he was running both formations for the Abyssals. So he had the Succubi formation with two troops and two regiments of Succubis, along with an Abyssal Temptress who had Banechant. And then he was also running the Moloch formation. So he had the two Moloch hordes and then the Archfiend on foot. And then he also had Bassasu. He had an Efreet with Boots of Levitation. And he had a horde of lower Abyssals and then Tortured Souls Regiment. So he put most of his melee stuff across the middle, the Molochs, the lesser Abyssals, and one of the Succubi Regiments. And then he put his Succubi troops out on the flanks where I had put those tokens. And he put one Succubi Regiment out on the flank as well where I had stacked some kings over there to, I guess, help guard against those coming in and taking out the regiment. And this one was a little slow. I slid up a little, and he's pushed up at the start. And then he fell back a little on his turn two, which was unfortunate because he didn't I didn't think about it. I had only played this scenario once before, so I'm not real familiar with it. And he thought we scored at the end of both players' turn, so sort of at the end of turn three after both of us had gone, rather than scoring at the end of each player's turn or each player's portion of the round. So he backed off on turn two, which meant then I just moved up and claimed those three tokens on turn three to start across the middle to start generating some points. And then he had to come back up then on his turn three. And I told him, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. I didn't think about that. We can just start scoring from turn four if you want to, but he said, nope, no, it's my fault. So go ahead and score it. So in the end, I think it was okay because we would have just been contesting them on turn three, so neither of us would have scored much, but I had started weeding his units out by turn five and six, so I would have been able to score some points then. So I don't think it really changed the outcome of the game, but it was unfortunate that we weren't on the same page with that. So then on his turn three, obviously he moved back up to try to get into scoring range or contesting range, and it got a little bloody in the middle because I had to have units up there to claim the tokens, obviously. So I can't remember exactly how it went, but he cleaned off several of my units. And then in the end, I was probably up by at least four, but probably by 4 or 5 points. I don't remember, because I was able to knock his units off the side tokens in the back, so I was able to score those as well as whatever points I had picked up from the middle. But it was a fun game. Like I said, he had, for me personally, the best looking list there. As much work and as good as some of the other lists look, I just really like the style of his list. Suits my personal preference. And it was a fun game. And like I said, he came storming back later in the tournament after this and finished really strongly. Maybe we talk about that more at the end. But it was a fun game too. And I think, like I said, it was a little rougher for him. But for me, it was kind of fun because I had to push up. I was going to get some units killed by melee. And then obviously, you know, you get the trombones and stuff into them. But it was another good game.
So you're sitting pretty well.
Yeah.
After two games.
Yeah. So one thing I didn't mention earlier, in this one, we did not count attrition. So it was just straight 5, 10, 15 for loss, draw, win. And then there were 5 bonus points for completing objectives, kind of like some of the stuff the Southeast has done in the past, maybe killing your opponent's least expensive unit, keeping yours alive, killing their most expensive unit, keeping yours alive, getting into their deployment zone, keeping them out of your deployment zone. Just, I think he had a pool of maybe about 10 possible objectives that he cycled through over the 6 games.
Did you guys take a lunch break after game 2?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we took a lunch break. So who did I take out? I can't remember. Somebody traveling in. I think it was Mike Carter and then Felix, probably Mike and Felix I took out for lunch.
Nice.
Which actually turned out to be a mistake because this was the busiest I'd ever seen Adepticon, and I could not find a parking spot in the whole lot when I got back. Finally found one way up by the main road, and then I was probably 5 minutes late to my next game because I bet I spent 10, probably 15 minutes by the time I walked in just getting a parking spot.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Talk about game 3. Let's get in.
To game 3, let me check here quickly because I can't remember. Jesse was game 3 or 4. Jesse was game 3. That's right. Yeah. So I played Jesse, minor internet celebrity, major internet celebrity perhaps, in game 3. And this one was, let's see, this was Ransack. So we had a 3-point token in the middle, and then both of us placed a 2-point token, and both of us placed 2 1-point tokens. And Jesse was playing his ogres, but he'd switched it up a little more from Masters than what I had. He had dropped down. He was using the formation, so he didn't have chariot hordes anymore. He had the regiments, and he had a warlord who he gave the rally banner to. So his warlord was a 16-18 on chariot, and then his 2 regiments were also 16-18s. Some pretty buff nerve there. He had 2 hordes of siege breakers, 2 hordes of boomers, 2 troops of red goblin scouts, 3 boomer sergeants. I think he had a flag guy, and he had a warlock to give aura of heroism. So he's picking up another 1 to 2 nerve points on some other units via that. In addition, so he's got a couple of formations set up. A couple of groups of units set up that are getting some nice nerve buffs. So Jesse got to go first, and he just came steamrolling across the table because he knows what's up when you play against goblins. So I ended up – that one I had probably put my I put my rock lobbers in the middle table, and that was probably a mistake. I probably should have put them on the right because I could have still shot over the hills at his chariots, which was the main thing I was looking at shooting with them, but it also would have had, I could have put him on the flank where he had his siege breakers. Later in the game, I had to block line of sight to them with one of my chariot hordes, and then there was a hill in the way as well. So that was probably a bit of misdeployment on my part, but it worked out okay. So the game was pretty tight all the way through. Again, we played at Masters, and I think we probably had a game in last year. Last year at Adepticon, we actually played goblins and ogres as well, although two fairly different list from what we were playing this year. And so he got into me on turn 2, which was not unexpected. And it took me a while to chew through his nerve with the defense 5 units. Plus, I was trying to get his boomers off because I was actually a little more worried about his boomers than his chariot hordes. I could use my hordes to sort of him, his chariot hordes in a little, or sorry, his chariot regiments in a little bit, and it was going to take him a couple of turns to go through, maybe three if I got lucky because I drug him through terrain. But I was concerned that the boomers would be up and able to shoot at anything versus what I gave them, like with the chariot regiments. So I managed to get one of the boomer hordes off fairly quickly. I think the other one I had to charge a horde of regiments into, and that's where I started blocking the lines of sight up. And took a while to get those guys off, but eventually got both his boomer hordes off. I took off both his chariot regiments and all three of his boomer sergeants with a couple of kings and a chariot horde on one flank, my left flank, his right. I never did really do much with his siege breakers, so they ended up capturing a couple of tokens at the end of the game. And then I had captured some tokens on my side at the, for the end of the game. And then I made a mistake again, ran out of time on turn five. So that was interesting. And one of the scenario objectives was to claim a terrain piece on your side. And I wasn't looking because we were playing with 2D forest. So I had already claimed a forest on my side and I didn't even think about it. I had a king that was maybe a few inches off the center token. And I ran it back to claim another terrain piece just for the bonus point there, which then opened up the center token for him. I thought I was going to be okay on token scoring. It opened the center token for him to spin his king, his warlord on chariot 180 and then run 8 inches back at it and claim the center token for 3 points. So we ended up – I was up 6-5, but you had to win by 2 points. So we ended up with a draw, which was – you know, a good result anyway, because Jesse's always a fun game and it was a tough game and he plays scenario so well. So if you're not on top of it, he'll definitely catch you out on
He's
scenario.
Very wily.
I kept telling him like I'd get ready to make a charge somewhere. I'm like, oh, that was just a trap, wasn't it, Jesse? When I'd see if I do this, then I'm in trouble because he had something else lined up. So it's always a fun game with Jesse and you better pay attention or he'll suck you into one of his traps. But very fun game. And we both ended up actually max points for a draw. We both got all five of the scenario points in this game. So we had a 15-15 draw and a lot of fun. We were talking about it for quite a while afterwards. It's kind of funny. And I'm not blaming dice at all. It's just interesting that it happens against Jesse. I had three snake eyes and I think three yellow bellies, and it was probably, I don't think I'd rolled snake eyes maybe more than once the whole tournament, the first two games to this point. And I don't even know if I'd rolled a yellow belly yet. So I don't know if it's Jesse or if it's Mastercrafted, but they definitely got my dice number on those ones.
So how about game four?
Game four was against Joe Neat. And let me think. Scenario... let me look at the table here. Oh, we played push. And in this one, Mike had changed it up a little bit. So for push and loot, no unit could hold more than one token. So normally what I like to do is put three tokens on a rabble horde and just push them forward. But in this one, I had to spread them out. So that was a change. Same thing for everyone else, though, as well. Let's see, for this one, I put a couple of rabble hordes on my left flank and gave them tokens, and then I put a mincer behind them and gave that a token as well. I was just going to push that stuff up. Opposing those, he had his Archfiend and his Efreet. And then across his center, he was running, I believe he had a Succubi regiment and then a Fleshling regiment. Then he had two Moloch hordes and then another Succubi regiment next to the last Moloch horde, and then on his far left flank, my right, he had two hordes of tortured souls, and somewhere in the middle of the mess, he had Cronius, I think, between his two Moloch hordes, and he had the Well of Souls kind of. So I just lined up from my left flank, and then I didn't extend all the way over to the right, so I had the two rabble hordes and a king over on my two kings actually over on my left. And then I had the two chariot hordes next. And then I had the whizzes behind it and then spitter hordes. I was able to butt up against blocking terrain so that they'd have one flank protected. And then I had a king and a mincer kind of on their outside of their flank behind the blocking terrain to see if they wanted to move up and do any shooting, or else they could just kind of wheel around and come back in if it looked like something was going to threaten the spitters. So I started pushing up the first round. I think I got first turn, and I pushed my tokens forward on the left, and then I shoved the king way up. Well, I played against Joe in the team tournament, so I knew he didn't like shooting, so I wanted to push a few targets up for him to be able to charge earlier rather than just sit back and shoot the whole time. And then I also felt like if I could run my king up, there was a building I could hide behind, so I ran my king up, turned him in where he would put some amount of threat on his fleshling and succubi regiments, and he'd have to do something to deal with it. And then I had another king over there as well, so if he moved the archfiend up too far, I would ground it, or if he brought the freed into range, I would go after that as well. So we kind of danced around each other a little bit over there. I think it took him a couple turns to get the king on chariot off on the left. Meantime, I'm slowly pushing my tokens up on the rabble hordes and doing what I can to try to drive his Afreet back, because I wasn't too worried about the archfiend taking out a rabble horde, but a couple of rounds from the Afreet would do a lot of work on him. I think it took me a couple turns, and then with shots from the kings, I was able to keep it. The Afreet wavered until the last turn of the game. In the middle, I think the first round I put 5 or 6 wounds on his Well of Souls, and then I moved a rabble horde up just enough so that he could charge it if he wanted to. So basically, he took that charge because he knew if he sat back, I'd just keep chipping wounds on it, or he'd have to move it out of the way and not do anything with it. So he charged it up to get it into combat and start regening life, but then that put it in range of all my shooting. So I took it off and took his Well of Souls off in turn 2, and I think I got his Cronius in turn 3 and was dealing with the Tortured Souls at the same time too. I think I had both of them off by turn 3 or 4. So ended up cleaning up pretty much everything in the middle. The only scoring unit he had left was his Archfiend. I had pushed 2 tokens across, one on a king and one on a rabble horde, but he took the king off on the last turn with his Afreet. So then I was just sitting on 1 token, and he could have picked up a token with his Archfiend, but he ended up charging into me on his turn 6. Maybe thinking if it went to turn 7, I was going to blow his Archfiend off anyway. So he moved his Archfiend up to where if there was a turn 7, it would be in position to go after my rabble horde with the token, I guess. I'm not sure. But anyhow, we ended on turn 6, so I had 1 token on his side. And I can't remember if I picked up another one with my spitter horde or if I just moved him up so that if there was a turn 7 and I needed it, I could pick another one up. But I had 1 token, he had none. So came out for a victory for me.
And how'd you find him as a player? You know, he's kind of been not really in the mix lately, right? He really hasn't been playing a lot of King's War. Did you think he was rusty? I mean,
I thought he was fine. I might have played a few things differently, but it's an army that I don't play, so I'm not real familiar with it. Some of those things are 50-50, like with the Well of Souls, right? I gave him a charge he could take. Wasn't going to be a great charge, but then again, sitting back with it wasn't going to be a great option either. So I think that's some of it, right? He just was forced to probably take some moves he didn't want to, because if you sit back, you're just going to get shot at over time. I thought he did fine. We had a couple of rules things that came up, so I was happy to see that Mike agreed with me. But I'm just kidding, Joe. It's more right. It's things that have come up before for me that I've played.
You've already been through it. Yeah.
So right, I knew how he played it in the past, and I was pretty sure that was the right way to do it. So probably things that maybe they've played the other way in their games. And like he said, he's got a smaller pool. Maybe he's just played against 2 or 3 people because he hasn't gone to a lot of tournaments. So he sees the same sorts of list, but he doesn't get practice against a lot of different kinds of lists. And I've seen several different kinds of lists with going to tournaments. So
when are you going to make this army? Because, you know, you said this is not an army you play, but don't you really mean this isn't an army you don't play yet?
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Moloch's even still with the formation, so I don't know that I'd make an army like his. But I actually do have an Abyssal army, because Ashley had wanted to play that a couple of years ago. I think 2 years ago. So I made it, and she played it at Grant's tournament at Blood in the Sun. I myself have not played Abyssals yet, so maybe one of these days I'll break them out.
So that ended day one. Let's get a recap. You know, where are you sitting at the end of day one?
So I was 4 wins and a draw at the end of the day one. Sorry, 3 wins and a draw. And I believe Jerry was also 3 wins and a draw because he had a draw with Jesse in his game 4. So Jesse was sitting on 2 wins and 2 draws, but pretty close to us in points. And behind that, I'm actually not sure. I suspect, I think maybe Kyle Przelinski was on 3 wins and a loss. And there were probably a couple others who were 3 wins and a loss as well, based on final standings.
And so there was, go ahead.
Still several of us. There were still several of us up there is all I was going to say.
Yeah. And what'd you guys do Saturday night? Did you guys go have some fun?
So Mantic Night is Saturday night, and I ended up just sitting up in the Kings of War room talking to people until it was time for Mantic open night, and then I went over there in case they had any questions about Manticon event and just to hear, I guess, what Ronnie would spill the beans on.
Yeah, he always opens up more than he should, huh?
Yeah, I don't think he did too much this time around, but it was good nonetheless, right? Got to hear a couple of new things they're working on.
Yeah, I mean, also getting Vanguard early is good, right? We can all
sure
always like models early. That's, you know, that's always a win.
Yep.
And the Hellboy stuff sounded interesting, so we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Sunday morning, you rock up, and who are you playing?
I get to play my old buddy from local here, Jerry, and I were both 3 wins and a draw, so we ended up playing Loot for game 5.
And I assume he's playing the Empire Dust List or something similar to what he brought to the Masters?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it was the exact Masters list, but probably pretty similar. He had 2 hordes of the shooters. And then he had a regiment of horse archers with piercing, 2 scavenger regiments, 2 mummy regiments, I believe a horde of spearmen and a horde of revenants. Skeleton Husk, 2 cursed high priests with heal, and a winged pharaoh. I think that was all his list.
And how'd you get on?
It was fun. We got to it pretty quickly. Obviously, he's got long-range shooting, and he's got a nimble regiment of archers with the cavalry, so he can move up and shoot. And then I had, obviously, the chariots, kings on chariots and stuff, so I was ready to shoot from turn one as well. I had a chariot horde and 2 kings over on my right flank, and opposed to them, he had moved up the skeleton husk 12 inches off. Maybe not quite 12 inches. I don't think he did a full vanguard move. And he had his horse archers. So we were kind of just shooting each other back and forth, his horse archers with my chariot horde, and then his Guardian archers were shooting at the chariot horde as well. He wanted to get that out of the way to open up that flank. So we traded fire for a couple, 3 turns there. And then I managed to, he ended up maybe on turn 2, he snaked my chariot horde. So I got 1 round where I got it into combat. I think I charged the skeleton husk with it before he killed it, because it was at snakes or real close when he snaked it. He had had events over there as well, kind of next to skeleton husk, but he'd moved those up more to the center to get into combat with me. And I managed to take those off between trombones and whizzes in turn 5, probably a guardian archer's horde as well, that I had taken like 4 turns to circle around, and I was able to get a king into from the far side after I put some wounds on them, kind of both moving over the top of, neither one of us grabbed because we knew units would die and be trading tokens. Eventually he grabbed one of them with a mummy regiment. Like I said, I managed to kill that in turn 5. At turn 6, I had a token on a horde of rabble on my left flank and a token on a horde of spitters on my right flank. And both of them were pretty safe. I rolled my attacks. I rolled both nerve checks. And then as I was calling up the numbers, I ran out of time. Was able to pick up another 15 points plus probably 2 or 3 scenario points.
Just to recap, you beat Jerry. So that's a big win.
Yeah. That put me at 4 wins and a draw. And I think at that point, everyone else pretty much was had either 2 draws or a loss and a draw.
That's fantastic. And so going into game 6, who'd you play?
So I played Kyle Preselinski.
Didn't he play Jesse in game five?
He did.
Did he beat Jesse?
No, he, let's see, I think he ended up losing to Jesse. So I think he was 3-2 at that point. I think there might have been one score entered wrong. I haven't gone back to look at the points. Well, I know Matthew Temple picked up some points at the end, so I'm not sure. I think one of his wins must have gotten entered as a loss. So I'm not sure if that had changed if I would have played Matthew instead of Kyle. I hadn't gone back to look at the scores yet. But Kyle was playing much better. I think he was doing really well compared to last year. He really seemed to have a good grasp on this army. And I thought he did a pretty good job. Our last game was going to be rough on him. He's all melee. And then B, this table was a little weird in that it had sort of a half circle of terrain with blocking terrain with two open areas. So one was wide enough open to move a horde through, and the other one you could move a horde of infantry through, but not you could move a regiment of cavalry through, but nothing larger than a regiment of cavalry. So he ended up getting stuck on that side, and this was secure the field, so it was train pieces, and we both ended up picking train pieces on the side where the half circle hemmed him in. So basically he had two spots to get out that would still allow him to contest the scoring train pieces. Otherwise he had to go around his left flank to go all the way around that semicircle, and any units that did that were never going to get back into the combats to help control the terrain pieces. So he had two troops of Revenant cavalry, a regiment of Soul Reaver Cav that probably had Pathfinder on them, I guess. He had Apophis, but without the wings, so the new Living Legend in the cock 2018 pack. He had the Barrow Whites, or the Barry Whites as he likes to call them, two regiments of Soul Reaver Infantry, a horde of Revenants with Brew of Strength, and a Necromancer and a mounted Revenant King who had, I don't remember, maybe a Bane Chant or something. I can't remember what he had on. Oh, he had a Stealthy on one of those casters as well. An evil Stealthy spell. So we started off. I probably had first turn again, so I was just chipping away at his Revenant cavalry troops to get those out of the way because he could screen all his height due units. And obviously the height one Soul Reaver's infantry as well with those units. So I wanted to get those out of the way. At some point after deployment, I actually realized I couldn't shove my chariot hordes through the gap in the blocking terrain on his right flank, which there was an obstacle there that I had picked as the controlling terrain piece. So that limited a little bit what I would have done. In the end, I think it worked out okay, but I couldn't charge that side. And then on the other flank, he had his Soul Reaver Cav, so effectively they were never going to be able to get the scoring terrain units. It was just a matter of him being able to take out however many of my units he could to maybe pull them away from the scoring from the forest back in my left flank corner, and then the obstacle up on his left flank in the middle, closer to the middle of the table. So my units pretty much from right to left. So left was where the scoring pieces were, so I'll start on the right side where these units were never going to score. I had a rabble horde, and then I had two rabble hordes that I was going to use just to clog up the open space in the center of the half circle. There was one gap there that was just wide enough for an infantry horde, and I just was going to pin him in with a couple of rabble hordes there. And then, of course, I had the trombones and the whizzes lined up between with those rabble hordes. And then I had spitters back sitting in the forest to control that, and then they'd just take whatever pot shots they could. I knew they wouldn't do much in the game. And then I had my two chariot hordes over on my left flank near the obstacle, and I was hoping to use those to help contain him and then push him for scoring purposes at the end of the game. And I had another Mincer and a King on Chariot over there. So we started off, I chipped away at his Revenant Cavalry. I don't think I got either of them the first turn. The second turn, I managed to take one of them off, and the other one I had still chipped away on, but I didn't get it. Either I didn't get enough wounds or I snaked it. I don't remember. And then probably turn three, maybe. I don't know if it's two or three. He got his Soul Reaver Cav up into my Rabble Horde on the on my right flank, and then he started doing some work because he was able to start putting those into units. I had set a couple of Mincers and a King up behind the Rabble Horde, thinking, you know, Mincers will do some damage to the Soul Reaver Cav. And then on my turn, I yellow bellied both my rolls to get in on a Soul Reaver Cav. So failed that. Kind of kept me bottled up in the middle. We were just slapping each other because he had a Revenant Horde against a Rabble Horde, even though they had Brew of Strength. I think they finally killed him on about turn five, maybe. His Revenant Horde killed my Rabble Horde. Probably took him three turns to get into combat because they were both kind of slow. And then eventually, I believe in the last turn, maybe I took the Revenant Horde off with shooting. Over on the other side, I managed to get a lot of wounds on his Barrel Whites, probably on turn three. He charged a Chariot Horde on his turn three, killed that, and then I took the Barrel Whites off. And then I was kind of able to hem his Soul Reaver infantry up. So at the end of the game, he had 4 points scoring. No, actually two, because I managed to kill one of his Soul Reaver infantry units. So he had one infantry unit that was scoring on the obstacle. And then I think I had two hordes scoring charge from the Revenant into a flank of a Rabble Horde. But I had mentioned that gaps in the train pieces weren't very big. And so he was just a millimeter or two short of being able to squeeze through the gap because I had a war trombone blocking part of it. So he was either going to have to run over the war trombone or run over the blocking terrain. He couldn't fit between. And it was very close. I'd like to say I planned it that way, but I don't think I really did. I think I just happened to have the trombone in the right spot because it had been sitting next to my horde. So it worked out to keep him blocked up. He wasn't able to get out there. And I ended up winning that one 6 points to 2 points because we went unit strength within the 3 inches of controlling the terrain. If it had gone to turn seven, if he had killed me, I would have been able to run a Chariot Horde back up to the forest. So I still would have had 6 points but it would have been six to his five, unless I managed to kill off his Revenant Horde on my turn. But it was a close game. What I found really interesting, we had to win by two. So if it had ended, if he had been able to squeeze through with his Revenant Horde and kill my fresh Rabble Horde in the flank, and overrun enough to be in range, you had to win by 2 points. So that would have put a 6-5 and would have been a draw. So even though at the start of the game we both looked at it, and I think we played it a little, maybe deployed and played a little lackadaisically early because we thought it was going to be with the side he had that he wasn't really going to have a chance. It just goes to show, you know, at the end of the game, things happen. Maybe you get a favorable for you snakes roll here and there. I know I had a couple yellow bellies against him again in that game. Seems like it. Like I mentioned earlier, it just happens against Mastercrafted, I guess. It turned out to be potentially a pretty close game, right? A couple of ifs, and it would have been a draw.
So when did it sink in you're going to win this thing?
I was feeling – this is another interesting story. I was feeling pretty good at this point, obviously, right? Because I knew I thought I knew where everyone else was. I thought Jesse and Alan, they were playing next to us, and I thought they were the next – probably table down. Of course, Jerry was I knew he was on a loss and a draw at that point, so I was probably ahead of him. I didn't know where the other people were sitting, but since they hadn't been playing against Kyle and Jesse, Alan and myself, I figured, you know, I was probably okay. So Mike was tallying everything up. We get to the awards, and then I got a little worried, and it was kind of funny because Jesse got a little worried too. So he got ready to do the announcements, and you know, we figured that top three would probably come off the top two tables, or maybe Jerry. I'm guessing is probably what Jesse was thinking as well. So then I forget what order he did. He probably did sports and paint first. And so Kyle, of course, won best painted with the 90% Mantic Army. And best sports, I think his last name is Hal. I'm so bad with names. He was from... He's one of the guys from Elizabethtown, E-Town.
Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
He had challenged Joe for game one. Let me see. I'll find his name. I think, is it Adam Howell? Andrew Hall.
Yeah. Funny story about Andrew is he actually is an ex-Memphis guy and used to play at the Bunker Warhammer Fantasy with us. And we met him at Sword of Kings last year. I don't know if you remember, he was at Sword of Kings last year and he was playing, he was learning the game for the first time.
Effectively walked off tables and getting shot at, not by me because I didn't play him, but other people apparently. So it was kind of a rough. But he won best, so he got to take home some hardware. Actually, they had really nice looking trophies. They were new ones. I'm not Blaine's this year. Something, a new figure that I hadn't seen before, so that was pretty cool. But anyhow, so Andrew won best sports, and then they started announcing places. So third place went to, so he announced it, and with the very nicely painted Abyssal Army, using House of Seer for Abyssals. So we didn't know, I guess at that point, we didn't know what the records were because Mike Carter, he didn't actually post any records. He just posted matchups. I could see Jesse's face, and I think Jesse even said something. I could see Jesse's face. He's thinking, oh man, what's going on here? Did I get jumped? I was trying to keep my face straight, but I kind of think the same thing. I'm like, maybe I just got jumped. So I was like, okay, well, if it happens, it happens, you know, whatever. So then Jesse ended up in second. So he was really happy then, you know, that took the pressure off once Mike announced second. And even at that point, I'm still like, I wasn't sure how Mike opened it up with saying, you know, the guy who's finished second twice or whatever. And I was like, okay, well, now I know because I had been second the last 2 years there. So it felt good to win it. But frankly, you know, as I was sitting there, I was like, you know, even if I don't win it, I had a lot of fun playing six games. And if somebody did sports and paint, that was fine. I luckily I'd had Masters last month and I did far better there than I ever expected to. So anything else is just kind of gravy at this point. But, I was happy to win it after having the 2 second places. I mean, it's Chicago, and just to finally sort of get that monkey off my back. I know Kyle said he was yelling, "You're the bride now," or "No longer the bridesmaid," or something, when I went up there, because that had kind of been the running joke the last couple of years where I had gotten second. And then to top it all off, it's really interesting that so Goblin Mega Army for the top spot. And so there was a course of Bronx cheers, I think, at more goblins coming down the pike. But I went down to the booth. I traded it for a couple of things for Warpath that I hadn't picked up previously. So I ended up getting a Vermin Tunneler and some Khaleeshi sculpts, which are pretty nice sculpts. So I was real happy with how things turned out, and I think it worked out well for a lot of people. I mean, obviously everyone, Jesse was really happy. He didn't win the sports vote, but he got second place, so he moved up a spot from last year. So next year he takes first place, and I moved to the bottom of the pile. And Kyle got best painted, which I know he put a lot of effort in. I mean, not to belittle anyone else who was there. But I've seen Kyle's posting and I know he put a lot of work into it. I'm sure, you know, Holy Diver and some of the other guys did too. I just haven't seen them talk about it as much. So I knew a big deal for Kyle. And I was happy to see Mark win something as well too, because he had a very nicely painted army, but he couldn't compete for best painted, since it wasn't a Mantic army. So that was nice. And then I opened up my eyes too, right? We got a couple of new guys here. Mark came down and finished third, and we had Alan down, I think, final spot of fourth from Minneapolis. So a couple of new guys from the Midwest. Mark had played last year, but I'm not sure how many tournaments he played in. And then Alan being new to Kings of War this year, a couple of guys who might be competing for spots on the team by the end of the year.
So looking back on the tournament, what was your standout unit?
Honestly, I'm really growing to like the Kings on Chariots. Just the mobility that they give you with the speed and the nimble. Not super threatening at 7 attacks, but they can chip a little shooting. They can try to set up flanks or get in a flank. And then if you get 14 attacks with Thunders 2 in a flank, that adds up, especially when you shove something in the front as well. So I really liked having them to run around and put a little pressure on people.
Is there anything in your list you would like to change?
Possibly just from the shooting aspect. If I could figure out something to replace the rock lobbers with, I might do that. I'm just not sure what else. Those are kind of how I deal with defense 5 and 6. And I'm not sure what other options I have in the list, since I'm not a fan of trolls. that would deal with that.
So what tips do you have for a player that's preparing for an event like Adepticon?
Practice on the clock, apparently. Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of funny. I was thinking, well, I didn't have any trouble at Masters, but then after the term was over, I realized we had 10 more minutes on the clock at Masters, so that would explain why six terms was no problem at Masters, and it was in two or three games here at Adepticon, I guess. But obviously, I think the more you practice, the better. I don't get a lot of practice in, but I've played enough over the last few years just in tournaments that, you know, that carries over, like riding a bicycle, I guess. And I think, you know, do the best you can with learning the rules, trying to understand the rules, and having a good grasp of the rules makes a big difference. I think it really helps. It's hard to say exactly how, but just knowing, I don't know, just kind of knowing what stuff can do. I think there's kind of two parts to it. So knowing, having a good idea of what various units do. I don't know all of them from opponents' armies, but I have a general idea for the most part how hard units hit, how fast they move, and so forth. That really helps out, unless you want to consult their list all the time, which is fine as well. But just to have kind of a grasp, seeing their units on the table, what they'll do. And then I think the perspective from playing a lot of games, it's more putting yourself in situations, right? So you can see things coming on the table before they occur. Probably helps you see a round or two ahead. I think that's my weakest point. And again, because I don't play a lot of games, I don't really see a round or two ahead. I just kind of play as it is. So the more games you get in, the less likely you're going to get caught by a flank charge that you didn't see, or some other move that somebody's setting up turn or two in advance. You'll have a better chance to see it coming.
What are your final thoughts on Adepticon?
Well, obviously I enjoy it since it's just a short commute for me, 30 minutes each day. It's fun. If you're going to play games, I like it better than Gen Con. I think Gen Con is just so huge. You spend so much time going to the vendor hall. For me, Gen Con would be more if I wanted to go, I think, play Pathfinder or D&D or something. Gen Con would be a better event for that. For miniatures, I think Adepticon's far better if you're interested in miniatures and you don't mind the convention setting. Obviously, depending on what games you play, you can play games over 4 days. You got miniature games going all 4 days of the event, demos going. I don't know how much stuff they have going late at night, but there's probably some Wormal Hordes Iron Kingdoms or Iron Arena or whatever they call it. Not my gig, but if you're interested in that, that probably runs late into the night. Otherwise, I'm sure there's always open pickup tables. You can find somebody to play a game with. It's not so big as Gen Con to be overwhelming either. I think there's maybe 4,000 people, give or take, at Adepticon versus, I don't know what, Gen Con pool every day, 50,000 every day or something.
Well, let's get into a few listener questions.
Sure.
On Twitter, Fred on Fantasy asks, I heard it was very different from a Southeast GT. What different meta do they have up that way, and how does he adapt his playstyle? So I guess he's really talking about, you know, what does the Midwestern meta look like? Even though I don't know, though, I guess you really can't say that Adepticon is a Midwestern meta, right? Because it's pulls from so many places.
Right. I would guess there's as many out of region as there are Midwesterners here. I know Kyle likes to say the Midwest trash meta, but I wouldn't even call Eric's list trash. That's mostly Kyle's list or trash. I didn't take a close look at all the lists there. I think there's probably more balance. I don't think it's quite as heavy shooting. Like I was probably, my list, Alan's list were probably about as heavy shooting. Jesse, I know between Boomers and Boomer Sergeants, he had 61 piercing breath attacks. So he had quite a bit too, but his is all closer range and you don't really think about it with them being ogres. Same way Alan's was closer range because he had the three organ guns that are only 24 inches. The three flame belchers are only 12 inches, but they pack a lot of punch if you get into that range. But otherwise, I'd say there was probably a lot of balance in the list, and there were a few that were pretty much mostly melee or all melee, like Mark Rupp's list. Probably Andrew's list as well was mostly melee, since he was playing orcs, it would have had to have been. There were a couple of fairly heavy cavalry list. I'm not sure if they were playing Kingdoms of Men or Brotherhood. but Matthew Temple and I think it was Hayden had a Hayden Hallett had I see Mike said his list was Kingdom of Men, so he was all melee I think pretty much in his list. So there was for 24 players I think there was probably a pretty good mix of list, but probably not as hard as what you see at the top tables in the Southeast.
Well, that's a great segue. Brian Tucker on Facebook asks, which of his skills did the Southeast not teach him? I know you've come to quite a bit of our events.
Apparently, they haven't taught me about clock management yet. So,
yeah.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite was when you and Jerry at the ATC a few years ago both timed out on this, in the same round. I thought that was
right
in fortuitous timing.
Yeah, that was crazy. We won't ever live that one down.
Adam Ballard asks, how did he get so good? It's not practicing, right? You don't practice. You just play. You just go to tournaments and win.
I think that's the help of goblins, probably the help and the hindrance. So playing goblins probably doesn't help my clock management at all, although I think I have clock management problems no matter what I play, so maybe it doesn't matter. But having, like I mentioned at the start, right, I have basically three of every unit or at least unit type that I take. So I have redundancies if I lose one here or there or I make a bad move. I've got some redundancies to fall back on. I've got enough units that I can refill holes in the lines if I need to. And then you're just throwing a lot of dice out with goblins. So obviously a lot of them aren't going to be very good attacks. But dice spikes go both ways, right? You'll spike some, like I mentioned, I had a couple yellow bellies. But at the same time, you're going to spike a nerve roll or some attack rolls here and there and get a unit that maybe you shouldn't have statistically. So I think that helps definitely balance things out with the goblins.
Lennon Roy asks, if on the last game on table one, would he play Beer Hammer instead?
Unlikely. As you know, I'm not much of a beverage drinker. Occasionally I have one here and there. I guess you could challenge me to a water drinking contest and mock me for that. I don't know.
So Felix Castro, everybody's favorite, has chimed in and asked, is challenging him in round one of a tournament to get my 0-20 loss early so I don't have to face him later on in the tournament a valid strategy?
I would say yes, because as you notice, I challenged Jeff O'Neill at Siege of Augusta, and I figure it's win-win, right? I don't have to play him again, and if I lose, I get to submarine. So it sounds like a great plan to me.
And I didn't hear, how did your game go against Jeff?
Oh, he didn't want to challenge, or he didn't want to accept.
Okay.
He's not a Facebook guy anyway, but I think, you know, he hopes that the way the war score falls, maybe he gets to fight a baby seal first round. I think that's what's going on.
So Andrew Summers asks, how many regions is he going to attend a two-day GT in during the month of April?
Only two planned, so unless I get kidnapped or something, and one of them will be Midwest, so.
So that almost doesn't even count.
I mean, it's the far corner of Midwest for me.
Is that the War Kings
Mike's
GT?
Event. Yeah, War Kings over in Ohio, so.
And you're coming to Blue Sea Brawl, Southeast, so yeah. I guess Andrew's alluding to you should come to Lone Wolf?
Not this year. I don't think they'll give me extra time off.
Understand. David Reed asks, what's his favorite food?
Well, you know how I said I don't drink beverages earlier, so favorite food might be the salty tears of those on Fanatics who cry about anything and everything. How's that?
That's fantastic. If he could design or modify one Kings of War army, what would it be?
Honestly, I don't know. I've played several of them, and I like a lot of the different army lists as they are, just for the various differences they have. Wow, what a generic answer. But for the various differences between them, goblins are fun as a horde army. I'd like to try Ratkin sometime too. Similar in some respects as a horde, but they would play quite a bit differently from goblins, I think. You can definitely go much more melee heavy with them. And then I've played some of the elite beater list with Varanger and Basileans, fairly Elohi heavy. So played both spectrums. I kind of like them all, and I know even when people were talking about consolidating up the human list, I still kind of like the differences between Brotherhood, Kingdoms of Men, and Rorty. I think it gives them all different, slightly different flavors, and they'll all play a little differently.
So his final question, if the moon was made of blue cheese, would you eat it?
No, I do not like blue cheese. Sorry.
All right, Noah Nathanson asks, and this is, I apologize, this is a weird one. Would he prefer to rub Jesse Cornwell all over with coconut oil or baby lotion?
Coconut oil, obviously. I mean, that's a health food right there. So,
right.
Much healthier for you.
You know, obviously Lennon asked where you're from, but you answered that in the beginning. Yep. So I think those are some great questions. Hopefully we get some people to next time we have a guest on. There are some very interesting questions. So let's talk about what the other thing that people are interested in. Where are we going to see you the rest of the year? What events are you attending?
Oh, so yeah. So obviously we've mentioned April already, Blue City Brawl and War Kings. May, TNT, of course. Looks like I'll be pairing up with Robert Brannon again. And I think my daughter's going to be busy, so won't be pairing up with her. Looks like maybe David Reed again, who I played with last year as well. And then I think Keith Randall, because Tim Smith dumped him for the Smith Brothers.
Really? Group. I didn't hear this. This is quite a coup. Quite a coup.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. I think that's what's gonna happen.
How about June?
June. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So I know both Chris Fisher and Adam Ballard have been pinging me. I talked with them both at Masters and played Adam at Masters, played Chris on Universal Battles tuning up for Masters. It was fun, but I think I'll probably, out of those two at this point, I'll probably end up going to Bug Eater, because we're going to make it a joint Midwest event with them to try to help out their numbers. So I'd like to go and help them out.
It's closer too, right? I assume.
Probably not significantly, but yeah, a little bit. I think it's 7 or 8 hours over there, and right. Yeah.
But you don't care. Sure. I mean, you travel down to Augusta, Georgia. I mean,
sure. Yeah. Mountaineer is going to get several other guys from the Midwest. I think Andrew is heading over there and the guys from Ohio. So that would be interesting, because I know Chris was talking about doing something like what Robert did at Siege, where they have a best region, sort of top three guys from each region compete. And at the end, right, they tally up the scores and give out a best region thing. So that would have been fun to do. But I think I'll head over to Bug Eater. It might be my only chance to play Chris this year. Hopefully.
Well, Chris ducks you every time. You know, Chris knows that you're coming. He's like, well, I don't want to play you. I don't want to lose.
I think we play at every event we go to together. But with his plans for the rest of the year, that might be the only event that we both hook up at that one of us isn't running as a TO.
My question is, what's your record against Mr. Kapsner?
I haven't lost to him yet, but I think I'm either one win and three draws, or two wins and two draws. I forget. He's going to have my number one of these days for sure.
If you dial the phone, eventually the right person's going to pick up, right? I mean, 5-6 chances, eventually he should beat you.
Well, and to be fair, the first time I played him, he was brand new to Kings of War. At Waupaca, it was his first Kings of War tournament, I think, and probably my first or second in second edition, but I had obviously had first edition background. So sorry, sidetracked there. We were at June, so probably one in June, and then July, Robert asked me if I'd team up at ATC again, so I'm going to try to head down to ATC, and I think it'll be Roberts and Chris Beers and I. So I don't know if we can challenge the mighty Sons of Vulcan, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, that's quite – hey, if you're going to challenge, challenge the champ,
we
got
to
right?
at least be able to beat the Tennessee trio of Tim and Keith and Todd, I hope.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, how about August? You got anything planned?
August – so I guess the end of July / August is Lady of the Lake. That's kind of the biggest one for me in some respects, because that's our biggest Midwest event. And then obviously since Chris puts it on. August, I don't think I'll have anything. I haven't looked closely at the calendar, but I don't think there's anything close, nothing Midwest. So I'm not planning anything for August. September, though, then obviously we get into the – hopefully the Clash of Kings event should be the end of September. So I'll be running that here in Chicago. I'll come back to that in a minute. October is Dragonfall, so that's Jerry's. Jerry should be running that. Jerry Page here in Chicago. They'll be at a different venue this year. Should have more space. They're going to have vendors this year. And I forget the dates, but it'll be, if it's like last year, it'll be kind of the middle to late October, probably. I don't have the dates in front of me, but I'm guessing it'll probably be the 20th and the 21st, or the 19th through the 21st of October. November might take that off as well. I know you guys have the Forge, which I was interested in last year, but another long drive, so I'm not sure. We also have one up in Minneapolis for the Midwest, but it's the week before Thanksgiving, so that's a pretty tough event you don't want to go to as well. So November might be a month off again. And then December is Kings of Winter in Springfield, Missouri. I'll most likely go to that, down to that again, because they pull from like four different regions for that.
Yeah, I was supposed to go last year, and it looked, sounded like they had a great time.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, for sure.
Well, what about new army ideas? I mean, I know you're a guy that switches armies like a pair of pants. What's next?
So for armies, obviously I'm working on one for BCB. So we're kind of doing a theme. And I'm going to be basing off the St. Louis Cardinals for my theme. So then that kind of led me into Alohi, because Cardinals fly, Alohi fly. Cardinals are, you know, superior baseball team. Alohi are superior race. So it all works together, right?
That's right. Good synergy.
No, it just so happened that I thought that would work out pretty well. And then Robert's going to – I won't give his list away, but he's going to team up same theme with – an old rival. So that should be a lot of fun. And then, so I want to take something different to War Kings as well. I was hoping to get a herd list together for that, but I can see I'm just not going to have time to do that. So I'm going to try to build off an old list that I haven't played maybe since first edition. It looks like I should just have to do five or six more models and I can get that ready to go. And so I'll take that to War Kings. And then hopefully, I have a base coated Twilight Kin army that I need to get finished painted up. So hopefully get that done later in the year. And maybe I can get the Rordia guys that we got from Westphalia. And I picked up some from Battleforge. Mm-hmm. Get those painted up for something later in the year as well. I was thinking Lady of the Lake, but I might have to do that later in the year or early next year if I don't get it done in time.
Well, before we get out of here, people want to know, where do they follow the adventures of Shannon Shoemaker? Where is your electronic footprint? Is Facebook the place? Twitter? You know?
Yeah, Facebook. I need to wean myself a little bit, I guess, especially with them in the news lately. But
yeah,
mostly just on Facebook, because that's where so many people from Kings of War post. I don't do anything on Twitter or pretty much anywhere else. So, you know, best place to find me is hopefully at your local tournament, right? Because I know I'd love to be there.
And you usually are.
Yeah. Universal Battle, maybe, once I get caught up on putting armies together, if you want to get a game together sometime. I mean, it's not as good as playing in person, but it's the next best alternative. So I can be found on there. Might have to arrange it in advance, but I'd definitely be up for games on there.
Well, fantastic. Well, Shannon, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Rob. It's a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing you in a week.
Absolutely. Tomorrow, we have Good Friday off, so tomorrow I'm going to the Rat House and we're going to set up the last two tables and kind of just give the place a little final scrubbing. I mean, there's only so much you can do to a place called the Rat House, right? But yeah, so we're excited. It's going to be awesome. Fun. We got 28 players from 10 states coming. It's a doubles format, which takes a lot of the pressure off because you really can't practice for that. It's a doubles event. All you can really do is know your army and know your partner's army and just, you know, go into it with your eyes open and just play the game. I mean, it's a challenge because a lot of people like struggle with time because they don't anticipate the added complexity of playing with a partner. Right. So they just think that they're just internalizing the game in their own head, but they don't realize they've got to communicate effectively and quickly with this other player. And it's funny, those first two rounds are rough on people because they're like, wow, we're running out of time because we're not working together as a team. But by the fifth game, you guys will have your kinks all worked out.
Hopefully Robert and I took care of that a little bit. Our armies are pretty straightforward. And by that, I mean straightforward
<That's>
for the
perfect.
Most part. So we'll see.
So I guess that's going to do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.